Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
Welcome back. Ray Schillins, Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production, and we have today for you Alex Ben Block, who is a senior editor at The Hollywood Reporter, also publishing great books, George Lucas's Blockbusting. He's also a popular public speaker, Toastmaster, MC, moderator. And basically has pretty much done it all, and also has a daughter who is very talented, Haley, a musician, and has her own band, and has had some hits as well. So, with that said, we'll talk to Alex here in just a few moments. It's Ray and Brad. Brad, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing wonderful. By the way, was that a product placement, or did Alex's daughter send you a CD or something?
No, I think we have to buy one. No, don't have one of those, and I'm sure she'd be happy if we downloaded it. That'd be great.
Hey, you know, do you have an iPhone? You have a smartphone.
No, I have a BlackBerry. I have the newest BlackBerry, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm an iPhone and iPad, not iPad, iPod, two different types of iPods, and, right. and not an iPad yet. But interestingly, MTV, Ray, recently partnered with iCondom to release an iCondom iPhone app, a geo-aware map that is in part tool, part crowdsourced experiment. The app apparently shows users how to search via GPS for the nearest place that sells contraceptives. It's part of MTV's Staying Alive campaign, and I have one here on my phone, and I just punched in your address, and it's showing that you're one of the locations, so I thought that was odd.
Yeah, well, it's a concession. It's kind of like, you think of a lemonade stand in the summertime, but think of a much more socially relevant lemonade stand, if you know what I'm saying.
That's right. You're doing your part. And
absolutely.
As long as you post the hours, because you may have some latecomers that wake you up early morning hours.
No, we're open 24/7. The Homeowners Association, I think, is having a problem with it, though. We have one of those big glowing red signs, condoms, and it, I don't know that they like that. I just don't think that that's probably
Think good. About it, Ray. If you're logging on to this iPhone app for a condom because you're trying to geo-aware yourself on where to get them, if you need one that fast, you might want to rethink what you're doing there.
Yeah, really. Think twice. Practice safe geo, whatever.
Safe planning.
Safe planning, something like that. Hey, Tiger Woods is, speaking of safe planning, Tiger Woods was dropped by yet another sponsor, Tag Heuer, the fine watchmaker, I might add.
Wow.
And has had limited use of Tiger's image in certain marks following that 09 car accident. Chuckle. Basically, the company signed Woods back in 02. And don't feel bad for Tiger, okay? I mean, the fact that he hasn't won a tournament since 2009, and let's see what else. He lost last weekend at the Bridgestone. And
He has half of his fortune now that the divorce is over, whatever that was.
Something like that. Well, over the past 19 months, Tiger lost endorsement agreements with AT&T, Accenture, PepsiCo's Gatorade brand. The 14-time major champion has maintained his contracts with Electronic Arts, Nike, Upper Deck, Berkshire Hathaway, NetJets, and TLC Vision Corp. He's got a new thing. He's promoting a muscle relief heat rub made by Kawa Company from Japan this past June.
Well, and, you know, if iCondom's listening, you know, maybe there's some relevance in Tiger becoming your spokesperson. He's obviously available.
I like that. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that's a great idea. That's a we've got kids going back to school too here, and you know, kids are throughout the country go back at different times. Here in Texas, they go back. I guess it's this coming or next week. I guess it is, and the folks up north are saying, "What? What do you mean? We just got out of school?" But yeah. Macy's has done something. They're launching a social mobile social cause marketing campaign for back to school. and it's called Do Something. The retailer donating a dollar to DoSomething.org for every designated quick response QR code that consumers scan within Macy's, the departments that they go into and such. Each scan will provide consumers, they say, with volunteer opportunity information as well as videos that focus on current fashion trends. And Kelly Osborne featured in a QR code video inviting young people to become active volunteers as well. So I like that. They're also donating a buck for every like on Facebook so on and so forth. So I think that's quite interesting. Consumers that participate, they say, in the volunteer activities and respond to Do Something will be entered to win a $250 Macy's shopping spree as well. So I think it's a really smart opportunity for Macy's and something unique and unusual that I don't know that, I'm sure the other folks are doing some stuff like that, but I thought that was rather unique and cool for Macy's.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting, all the talk about the Dow and economic matters here in the U.S. and worldwide for that matter. Out recently, there was a little blurb in Bloomberg about Yahoo, which has cost their shareholders so much money that a buyer would now be able to take over its core U.S. business for free, according to analysts. Yahoo has plummeted, Ray, 91% over the past decade as it failed to keep up with Google and Facebook. Really, I say keep up with those two. Google and Facebook have siphoned off many of Yahoo's original users. So when you hear this kind of thing, it makes you think about, Groupon and the $1.2 billion, whatever it was, that Google offered to acquire that, and others that have made acquisition interest in upcoming startups, and yet they say no thanks. AOL is a good example where, they were part of the Time Warner deal, and then Murdoch bought it, and now I think that they're still struggling. And I don't know, Ray. I'm going to say Groupon's going to wish they took that money back in 2010, 11, whatever it was that Google offered it.
I think you're absolutely right on. And also thinking back to when we did the Addy Awards in Nashville. You remember Yahoo was on top. They had won awards and all that kind of good stuff. So things change a little bit. We've got Alex Van Block coming up here on the Advertising Show in just a minute. But before that, Jeremy Kent's going to bring us up to date on what's going on in the UK. He also has a take on the riots going on there, which is incredibly odd. But here's Jeremy Kent on the Advertising Show.
Hello and welcome to London and the European News Desk. Coming up, Intercontinental sees profits boost following brand investment, McDonald's UK leads the way in Europe, and Sony sets out to revolutionise the music industry. But first, because Brad's already asked, and I'm sure many of you are wondering, what's going on with the London riots? The truth is, no one really knows. Left-wing politicians claim they're a response to government cutbacks. The right claim it's due to the overwhelming welfare system created under the Labour government that has removed people's sense of responsibility for their own lives. Others claim that local government, obsessed with health and safety, has legislated all the fun out of life, and actually that may be a component. What we do know is that it's not about race or a political movement. In fact, there's no cause there whatsoever. It's simply a mix of bored young people running in a mob combined with opportunistic criminality. Now, despite the stock market turmoil and the sovereign debt crisis, business seems remarkably solid in Adland right now. Intercontinental Hotels Group claims that investment in its brands has resulted in a 23% increase in operating profit for the first half of the year. The group, which owns the Holiday Inn, Intercontinental and Crown Plaza brands, says that the economic outlook remains uncertain, but still managed to post a $269 million profit, with total revenue up 10% year-on-year to $580 million. McDonald's is also bullish, reporting a 5.3% increase in European sales led by the UK, Germany and Russia. The company attributed much of the increase to the introduction of new menu items and a strong summer advertising campaign. The growing popularity of McDonald's breakfast menu and the ongoing restaurant refurbishment program underpin the uplift in sales. Finally, Sony has launched a new app that it claims will provide the music industry with a whole new revenue stream. Songs downloaded from the game are chart eligible, and because of that, Sony believes it's the perfect platform to launch new artists. It will also provide Sony with data about how, when, and how often people listen to particular songs. This is Jeremy Kent in London for The Advertising Show.
Thank you, Jeremy Kent, on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. As promised, Alex Ben Block, award-winning entertainment industry journalist, author, commentator, and talk show host, editor, a senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter, lead editor on the book George Lucas's Blockbusting, and so much more. We'll talk more about Alex as we get into the show here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, guys. Good to be back.
Well, always a pleasure. You know, I think most of us, Ray and I were speaking before the interview today, most of us are familiar with Netflix and certainly Hulu.com we've spoke about here on the show. Read recently, of course, Amazon jumping in earlier this year into the streaming category, if you will, and announcing a premium service that could stream both television and shows on demand. I understand that Apple, Alex, is close to launching a cloud movie service. Can you bring us up to date on what's happening in this category?
Yeah, it's been a very busy summer and busy year in the area of streaming content, both in terms of the services and their activity, and lots of deals going on with Hollywood, lots of people selling their old catalogs of libraries to Netflix and Amazon and others. And, of course, Apple has a close relationship with Disney. The big news this summer, of course, has been that Netflix pretty much doubled their rates. They used to give you a package for $7 or $8 where you got the streaming and movies delivered by DVD in your mailbox. Now they've split it in half and charging about the same amount, but for each service, which means it's double. So there's been a lot of angry subscribers and people complaining about that. The other big news has been that Hulu, which is a joint venture of a number of the big studios, and airs TV shows pretty much right after they air on broadcast, and you can go watch them online, is up for sale. And it's unclear who's going to own it or what's going to happen. In fact, there's a lot of speculation that even Netflix could be a possible buyer, or Amazon, or Apple, or any number of other people. So what we do know is that the whole way we watch television, the way we consume entertainment, is changing dramatically, and that the streaming services are competing with the TV networks, and it's different for the download stuff, you know, where you have to download and we have to pay for it. Video on demand is continuing to grow. But Netflix has really been the 900-pound gorilla here in the field. But now Amazon is coming after them. Apple, as you mentioned, is coming after them. And there's any number of others who are on the horizon who want to get into that business as well, including Google. And you can never underestimate Google. Even DirecTV is being talked about as a possible acquisitor of Hulu, or maybe Liberty Media, which owns Starz, could jump into this. So people are really changing the way they watch and getting their entertainment in different ways. And this is having a big effect on the ratings of the broadcast networks, the cable networks, how people use their leisure time. And we're going to see this continue and become even more heated battle. Netflix, by the way, is now going global. Not only are they already big in the U.S., but now all over the world they're expanding their service. And when they buy the rights to these things, you know, they don't buy them for the world. They buy them just for the United States, typically, or domestically. And so now they've gone back and they've rebought those rights, and they're having to pay a lot more money for them. And if you want to know why Netflix doubled their rates, it isn't just they're a bunch of greedy people in Northern California. The people who've been selling them content, mainly Starz initially and some others, realized how much money Netflix is making, how high their stock is flying, and they said, well, now your deal is up. We're going to renew, but you're going to have to pay a whole lot more money to get this content going forward. So yeah. Netflix has big bills, and they're trying to pay them, but I wouldn't underestimate any of these as new media players who continue to really challenge the traditional media players.
You know, Netflix, as we all know, a few years ago, the rap on them was that they were going to die with the DVD, and yet they transitioned to the streaming concept. Walmart recently announced, I don't know if you've heard this, Alex, that they have come on board with a video streaming service via Apple's iPad. They're calling it Vudu, which I thought sounded very similar to, you know, Hulu. And I don't know. Maybe their legal people at Walmart are smarter than me, but I think they could have chosen a different name there, but maybe there's a lawsuit happening for Hulu around the corner and Vudu. But do you think Walmart will have much impact in this category?
You know, I certainly agree. Walmart is another gigantic company. When they get into anything, it's a big deal. But you also got to remember that Walmart is primarily a retailer, and that their history is they've already entered the VOD market, and it didn't work out, and they withdrew from that. So they try these things, and they want to be in it, and but it's not their main focus. Whereas I have to tell you that a couple of years ago, I actually went up and did a whole big profile on the folks at Netflix. And at the time, the chairman of the company said to me, "We're going to be a streaming company. We consider the delivery of DVDs by mail a transition phase on our way to being a streaming company." So it's not like they changed and decided to be this. This was always their plan. And now what they're really trying to do, and what a lot of people are trying to do, is get you to stop using and buying physical DVDs. And I think we'll talk more in a little while about some of the things going on with this. But really what Netflix is saying to you is DVDs are the past. Mail delivery by snail mail is the past. And streaming video, electronic delivery is the future. And that's where all of these companies are heading. And they're committing huge bucks to it, even though the money isn't there yet to get it back. But they think by 2014, 2015, this is going to be a huge market. And so they're all investing heavily now. And we're seeing all these competitors come in. So you can never underestimate Walmart any more than you can underestimate Apple or even Amazon. But this is going to be a real dogfight. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, as our final topic for this segment, let's hear your thoughts on summer releases going so far. Any big winners and losers out there you can share with us?
Well, sure. In terms of the movies, clearly we know who the winners are. Transformers Dark of the Moon, worldwide, $993 million at this point, number one. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, now over $1 billion worldwide. And interestingly, it's about $344 million domestic, $723 million outside the U.S. Big surprise in third place for the summer, The Hangover 2. And again, it opened back in May, but I consider it a summer movie. It's got about $575 million worldwide. Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, not a surprise. Again, did $239 million domestically, almost $800 million worldwide for a total of over $1 billion. In terms of kids' movies, besides Transformers, the other big hit is Cars 2, the Pixar movie, but it's not as big as some of the other Pixar movies. Last year at this time, Toy Story 3 was a $1 billion grosser worldwide. Cars 2 was only about $420 million. Where Cars 2 is doing unbelievably, phenomenally well, this is something I just wrote about for the Hollywood Reporter magazine recently, is in toy stores. Mm-hmm. It is the dominant toy this summer, and it's going to be huge at Christmas time.
I bet that surprised you too, Alex, as well, that Cars didn't do a little bit better at the box office, huh?
It did surprise me. You know, the first Cars wasn't a huge box office performer either. But, you know, you expect with Pixar, everything they do, because they've done about a dozen movies, they've all been big hits. And, and also, the other thing about Cars, too, is on Rotten Tomatoes, which measures how critics look at it, it's only a 38% approval rate from critics, whereas Toy Story 3 had a 99% approval rate. In fact, this is the lowest approval rate from critics any Pixar movie has ever gotten. But the kids love it. And in talking to the people at the toy stores, it was interesting to me. One reason Cars works as a toy is because what they've done is they've taken a play pattern that kids did anyway, which is playing with little cars, collecting little cars, like die-cast cars, and they've made it into a brand and given it a personality and an identity. So it lives above and beyond the movie or even the shorts or TV stuff. It works as a toy for kids, and so it's just huge.
We are talking to Alex Ben Block here. By the way, I understand completely what you're saying, as we own most of those cars. I think one of the neat things that we do, and I love it. It's really great. But one of the things that they did for a consumer is they made them affordable. In other words, you don't have to pay an arm and leg to enjoy the after effects of the great movie as well. Alex is our special guest, as he is always. He drops by frequently throughout the year, and we will continue our conversation with Alex Ben Block and Ray Schillings and Brad Forsythe here on the Advertising Show. It's being powered by Shipple.com and a program, a platform called Tendency, powerful marketing platform. Check it out at Shipple.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. Back in just a minute with more.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsythe.
Hey, Columbus, we can't turn back with an order from you.
I'm not talking while the flavor lasts.
What are you chewing?
Back with you on the advertising show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and our very special guest out of L.A., it is Alex Ben Block, senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Always wonderful conversation. Alex, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let's move on to the small screen, Alex. Any big hits happening this summer, and what's the buzz for fall?
Well, let's talk first about some of these summer hits. Big Brother on CBS is one of the biggest. Of course, it's a franchise that comes back year after year, and it's really been dominant this summer. The series Wipeout on ABC, which I don't get, but apparently a lot of other people do, and draws a big younger audience, which is very attractive to advertisers. Big hit this summer. Hell's Kitchen is a hit on Fox. NBC has had success with America's Got Talent. Over on the cable side, some surprises. A thing called Switched at Birth is a big hit for the ABC Family Network, probably the top show in cable among scripted shows. The USA Network's had a great summer with shows like Royal Pains and Burn Notice, In Plain Sight, Covert Affairs, and White Collar. Their numbers are very high. VH1 has had a huge hit with this reality show, Basketball Wives. Again, I don't get it, but apparently a lot of other people do, and it's big. And another surprise to me on the History Channel, Pawn Stars is knocking them out of the park.
It's a great show.
is it?
It really
there
is.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Well, that's interesting. Now, you were going to touch on anticipated fall hits, if any.
Well, there are some. There's a lot of controversy around the Playboy show. I don't know if it's going to be a hit or not. But, you know, it's a period piece about the Playboy Club that's going to be on NBC. There's a whole lot of folks who think you shouldn't watch it or it's sexist or or not. And there's controversy going on back and forth. You know, Glee is coming back. Looks like it's going to be big again. And a lot of the shows you're familiar with are going to be big. I think there's no show that's getting more controversy, more discussion than The X Factor. This is Simon Cowell, who used to be the judge on American Idol, returning as producer and chief judge on this talent show that really has been a big hit in Europe, particularly in the UK, and now he's bringing it here. And Fox is hoping that they're going to be able to do in the fall with X Factor what they've been able to do in the January through spring period with American Idol, which has come up with a show that really is almost dominant in terms of when it's on the air, it just wipes out everything else. So, you know, there's a lot of other shows coming, and we'll see what the big hits are. And, of course, one of the most anticipated, we might as well jump right into it, is the new Two and a Half Men. Are you guys going to be watching to see how Ashton Kutcher does?
Yeah, it'll be real interesting to see what's going to happen with that. I don't see well, maybe it will be good. I don't know, Brad. What do you think?
I think the funeral for Charlie Sheen, I'll watch which is the way I understand they're going to kill him off. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that taped recently in Los Angeles, and apparently the buzz was very, very good.
Really?
You know, Chuck Lorre, who's the producer and showrunner, had a big falling out, of course, with Charlie Sheen. Very public, very ugly. And so he gets his revenge now by killing off Charlie Sheen's character in the first show. And Ashton Kutcher apparently is doing well. People are saying that he was funny and the cast likes him. And he's working, I don't know quite how the whole thing is coming together. I haven't seen it yet, but John Cryer and Angus Jones and the Holland Taylor and the rest of the cast are back as part of this. And what we do know is that Ashton Kutcher is going to be playing an internet billionaire who buys the house and somehow ends up living with this group and being involved with them all again.
Wow.
But I don't, you know, Ashton Kutcher is a very talented guy. I liked him on That 70s Show. He's a very successful producer in his own right, as well as an entrepreneur in business. And so I thought, actually, he was a very inspired choice, but now, Charlie Sheen is not out of it, as you may have heard. He's developing a show, not for this fall, but a producer named Joe Roth at Revolution Pictures, who had done several movies with Charlie, Major League and some others, has taken the picture Anger Management, which was starred Jack Nicholson more than 10 years ago, and he's going to star Charlie in a TV version of that for Lionsgate, in which Charlie's going to play the Jack Nicholson character, who's the counselor, who is a bit of a nut job, so You know, Charlie Sheen also, interestingly, the night that the Ashton Kutcher version of Two and a Half Men launches, Charlie Sheen will be on a different network being roasted by a whole bunch of comedians, making fun of him so they can try and steal some of the fire away on that night. So that's the real question. Are you still going to be watching Two and a Half Men to see what Ashton is like when you could be watching Charlie get roasted?
DVR, what? Alex, DVR.
There you go. Perfect.
And, you know, CBS just announced, Alex, that they're going to be ordering a script for the remake of the classic TV comedy Bewitched after scoring one of its few hits in the 2010-11 season with Hawaii Five-0. I'm curious. Well, first off, of course, anybody over 40 remembers Bewitched, starring Elizabeth Montgomery. Ran for 8 seasons on ABC, started in 64. You know, does this type of remake, as with Hawaii Five-0 and now the anticipation of Bewitched, they're not really, are they looking at focusing in on those that maybe don't really remember the original and the younger people, which would be new for that genre? Or do they look at bridging both the known and the unknown audiences when it comes to relaunching something like a Bewitched or a Hawaii Five-0?
Well, I think to some extent they do want to bridge it. You know, they want the nostalgia factor, people to come back who like the original show. But pretty much the advertisers are not that interested in the older viewers anyway. So it's really about this younger audience. And Bewitched is a great concept. And I think with the new special effects and digital effects and stuff, they'll be able to do a lot more stuff than they were last time around. And so you bring in a young cast. It's still an interesting idea. You know, it's got a little bit of marketability because we know the name from the past and people have seen it on DVD, or maybe they're watching it streaming on Netflix at this point. So they're somewhat familiar with it. So you have a marketing hook. You have the nostalgia, but you also have a fresh cast and a fresh approach and new showrunners and stuff. So, you know, these days there's so much clutter in the media. There are so many movies and TV shows. There's so many choices that anything you can do to give people some reason to watch, if only to see how it compares with the earlier version, is a good thing. Because once you get the tune in, then hopefully people actually say, oh, that was pretty good, I'll watch it again. And I don't underestimate CBS. Year after year, they continue to be the network that gets the most total viewers. They don't always win in the highly coveted 18 to 49 group, but they're right up there. And if anything, among all the networks going into the fall, they have the fewest new shows because they have the strongest schedule. Certainly with the CSIs and all the procedurals, we know about those. They've had a lot of success with that. So, you know, will Bewitched us when it comes on sometime in, 2012, 2013, by the time we see it, if we ever see it? Remember, it's got to get through the development process.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to make it through a lot of hurdles before it actually gets on the air. I'm interested. I'll be watching.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, you know, before we wrap up this segment, since we're talking small screen, let's talk just for a second about this month or next month's Emmy broadcast. Jane Lynch will be hosting. Reality producer Mark Burnett will be producing. Seems to me a bit of a strange combination there. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Alex?
Well, you know, there's a lot of effort here to try and freshen up the Emmys. They really are concerned that people aren't watching in large enough numbers. So Mark Burnett, who of course we know from Survivor and other shows, is determined to do something new. Jane Lynch, who really has broken out because of Glee. Interestingly, though, they're saying that the Glee character Sue Sylvester that she's known for will be used sparingly, if at all, on the Emmy cast. I think the quote from Burnett was, I think we'll probably leave her tracksuit on the Paramount lot. you know, they are looking to freshen it up, and they are hoping there's been a reshuffling of the categories. There's some effort to de-emphasize some of the cable stuff where HBO has been so dominant, not that they don't deserve it, but it makes the people on broadcast television who air the show crazy that their TV show is basically a large commercial for HBO. And so they've condensed some of the TV, movie, and miniseries categories to try and maybe have them win a few less awards. But, you know, when you look at the total number of nominations, HBO dominates again. And I think HBO is a great service. I give them all the credit in the world. They continue to come up with unique stuff that's different than anybody else is doing, edgy stuff. They're able to use that pay TV space to do things it can't do on broadcast television. So, you know, we're talking about the Emmys, and I think they'll be a big factor and probably win the most Emmys again. But in terms of a TV show, I thought Jane Lynch was actually a very good choice. She is a comedian. She's very talented. She sings. She dances. She can do it all. So I look forward to this Emmys. I think it's going to be fun.
Ray and Brad here on the Advertising Show with our special guest, Senior Editor of Hollywood Reporter. It's Alex Ben Block. Back in just a moment with more. Ray Shillin's Brad Forsyth. Happy you're listening to the Advertising Show. My special guest out of L.A. is Alex Ben Block, Senior Editor of the Hollywood Reporter. Back to it again.
Yeah, staying with awards, but moving to the big screen for a moment, Alex. Next year's Oscars, I understand, has a bit of controversy around it. Share with us those thoughts, would you?
Well, there's two different things here. Next year's Oscars are going to be produced by Brett Ratner, who is the director of such movies as Rush Hour and X-Men The Last Stand. And he'll be working with the veteran TV producer, Don Mischer, who's actually coming back for his second year and has done pretty much every award show you can do. And so they've got a fresh guy with a young guy with a different point of view, matching him up with a real TV veteran. So Tom Sherrick, the head of the Academy, I think has made interesting choices there. Whether or not that's going to be a successful show or not, it's hard to tell. You know, it's a tough thing to produce. The other part of it is that they announced the honorary nominees. Now, those are no longer given out on the show next year. They actually have a separate show in November, and then they repeat part of it on the TV show just to remind you what they did. And the big controversy is over Oprah Winfrey getting the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award. Now, this is an award that in the past has gone to some real Hollywood biggies of Bob Hope, Frank Sinatra, Audrey Hepburn, Elizabeth Taylor, Charlton Heston. And it's not that Oprah isn't deserving in terms of being charitable. The question is she in the movie business? Yeah. Now, I know she acted in some movies. I know she helped produce a few movies, but mostly she's in the TV business. And so a lot of people scratch their heads and say, well, wait a minute, what do we need to give her an award in the movie business for? You know, give the award to Sean Penn, for instance, for what he's done in Haiti. There's any number of deserving people if you want to give the Jean Hersholt Award again. It hasn't been given in several years. So, I think people are saying, is this the right choice? And it's not a knock on Oprah. It's a question of, is this the right person for the right award?
Who decides that? I mean, is that a little bit of a political deal there? Who makes those choices?
It's the Board of Governors, what you would call the Board of Directors, but the Academy calls them the Board of Governors. And these are industry people, many Oscar winners, all represent different fields of the movie business, from acting to producing to public relations to art direction. And they come in and they have to get a three-quarters vote of this rather large board to give an award, and they're only giving three awards in November. The other two, by the way, are to James Earl Jones and to the makeup artist Dick Smith, who will also be honored at that non-televised award show on November 12th. And people come in and they bring in materials and books and presentations, and they pitch all kinds of people, but it's very hard to get that three-quarters approval. And so it's that group who makes it the choice. And this year they tapped Oprah, and they seem to think she's the deserving person.
Wow.
So I guess I hear all the buzz out there about the NFL returning and finishing off their labor dispute. And, of course, NBA has now moved into the to the headlines as they continue to work through their labor issues. There's some question around baseball for next year. Bring us up to date on the state of the sports industry on television these days, Alex.
Well, after months of uncertainty about the labor situation, there now is an agreement between the players and the owners, and the National Football League actually is set for the next 10 years. And I think what we're seeing here is that the NFL and pro football continues to be the number one television sports event we have. And that as soon as the NFL was back, as soon as it was interesting again, the coverage all shifted, the excitement started to build, the fantasy football leagues, people getting ready, the games draw huge ratings, and, of course, the television contracts for Fox and CBS, as well as the coverage done by ESPN and others, is tremendous.
Very nice.
DirecTV counts on that prime ticket package where they basically show you all the Sunday games, and Sunday night is a huge reason why people buy DirecTV and stick with DirecTV. So it's a very powerful thing, and the NFL, you know, there's billions and billions of dollars at stake here. You know, I thought it took them way too long to make the deal, but now that they have the deal, clearly they're going to continue to be dominant in American television sports. Baseball, you know, it's, we call it the national pastime, but it's really, it takes a secondary role to football at this point. And so, you know, the World Series this fall will be on Fox, and they do a great job with it. The NBA is another story. Again, you got the owners and the players. It's hard to decide who's more greedy, who's the bigger villain here, but they can't seem to make up their mind what they want to do. And so they are in a very, very tense labor situation right now, and there's a possibility this season could be affected or canceled. Whether or not they'll, you know, I think they go back to camp usually in September and start working out, getting ready for the season. That could be interrupted. So the fact is television sports have become a big, big business. And we like to think it's all fun and games, but it's really about a lot of money at stake. And that's not going to change. And that's really what these battles are about right now.
Well, Ray, we can't let Alex get out of here with one final question about Desperate Housewives. I understand that the long-running hit from ABC will be ending after the 2011-2012 season. A couple thoughts there. Ray and I were discussing before the show today. Thought it was odd that they were going out while it's still a decent ratings winner for ABC, but it may be an issue of not wanting to stick around too long, as some successful TV series do. But more importantly, get your way in not only on that, but should we expect any spinoffs from this?
Well, at this point, they haven't announced any. And I think it's actually kind of classy the way they're doing this. And I have to say, Desperate Housewives is one of my personal guilty pleasures. I just love this show, and my wife and daughter and I have watched it regularly. This is the eighth season coming up, and it will be the show's last. And I think basically what they're saying is we want to go out on the top. We want to go out where there's still, you know, interest in this show. And we also want to give it, as the head of ABC Network said, a victory lap, meaning to end it in a way that you can plan to end it. You can wrap up the whole series. It can be kind of come together. And I think that's the classy thing to do, and I think it's going to be a great season. And, you know, Jerry Seinfeld went out on the top. I thought that ended too early, but, you know, sometimes it's the right thing to do. And so we'll still be desperate for Desperate Housewives, but we'll be seeing it in syndication and on streaming video for about the next 400 years. But, you know, the original episodes will go away. This was a great cast. Mark Cherry, who's actually not going to be the executive producer on the series for the final season because he's busy producing some other stuff, but still will be involved. And I think this is a, you know, a good way to end it, but I'm sorry personally that it's going to end at all.
Alex Ben Block, who is neither desperate nor a housewife, we always so enjoy having you here at the advertising show. You're kind of a bright spot in here in the weekend, so we thank you for that.
Okay, guys, always a pleasure, and let's all enjoy the summer and be safe and have a great fall.
Okay, thanks, Alex. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on the advertising show. Thanks for listening. And now you understand why Alex Ben Block is always one of our favorite guests here on the advertising show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Next week, another encore show for you. This is Tim Arnold, who is CEO of Possible 20. We hope you can join us then. And, of course, invite you to visit theadvertisingshow.com anytime and tell a friend as well, too. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. We'll talk again soon.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.